Every sports fan has always wondered what takes place in a negotiation. What happens behind the scenes with players, agents, and teams? What happens at the scouting combine? Well, welcome to our new podcast. And Jim Chapman is an agent who's been around the National Football League and college football for the better part of two decades. He represents some high placed college football coaches and some head coaches in the NFL as well, plus numerous players throughout the league. Jim's going to take us behind the scenes as we go through the Agent Confidential podcast. Well, for a kid who grew up in Kansas City, going to Blue Valley High Schools, on to Ohio State, how did you get into this business, Jim, of becoming an agent for football players in the NFL?
Well, I mean, I was at Ohio State, and a guy by the name of Jason Brown approached me about working with players because of my connections in Kansas City, Al Saunders, people like that, Marty Schottenheimer, and I became pretty close to those people growing up in the community, and was able to use those connections and to kind of leverage them to get to my first client in the NFL in 2003. So, those people helped me navigate the business and navigate, the ability to sign my first player. Most guys in this industry don't sign their first player until probably 3 or 4 years into the business. So if you can't make it within that time frame, typically you're done.
So who was that first client for you that kind of got this whole career started?
Well, it was my partner, Jason, and I, and, we signed John Henderson out of Tennessee, and, we got him through a Tennessee connection of mine, and we just rolled with him. He was in the first round pick and got very, very lucky. I mean, it definitely, even actually had people saying we cheated to get him and we paid him, which we did not. I've never paid a player in my entire career. So
what's that like trying to get these players to be represented by you, especially for a first-time guy who's out there and has never had any kind of track record before? You nail a pretty big fish with your kind of like your first cast out there. How did that all go down?
Well, I think, like in any business, you got to fake it till you make it, in all honesty. But I think as well, you just got to be there, hold their hand, walk them through the process, and build a relationship, and then from there, you just got to prove. You got to prove that you can get it done. Because there's until that name's signed on the dotted line, there's always someone trying to knock you off to try to sign a player like that. And even now, training and all that stuff was used by the big agents to divide themselves from the little guys.
Mm-hmm.
Because $25,000-$30,000 upfront money to sign a first or second round pick, that's why training became popular, because most of the guys were training in house at the schools, and then these big training facilities were created by the Tom Condons and the big guys in the industry to separate themselves, so little guys like us couldn't get those guys. You start doing 3, 4, 5 guys a year, that's $100,000+ just in training.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't even, pay the bills for your other stuff. So, it's a very, very tight window to be successful in this industry.
Well, it sure seems like from a lot of people's standpoints, you got to have a law degree or something. And obviously you're living proof where you don't need a law degree to be in this business and to be an agent in the National Football League. But you obviously have to have the connections. You obviously have to have the background. You obviously have to have kind of the knowledge of the sport in and of itself. You played in college football. How much did that help you get to where you are right now in your career by actually playing at Ohio State and having that background?
Yeah, you have to have a professional degree, which is a master's or a law degree. You just can't have an undergrad degree. Back to surviving the industry, if you don't have the connections or the ability to evaluate and develop players even on your own, you'll never make it, in my opinion, because, I had to survive off the 5th, 6th, 7th rounders, undrafteds, and being able to forecast and be able to project, sort of like what GMs and evaluators do, pro scouts, college scouts. I mean, it's really almost like a collaboration. between the two. I mean, if you really know what you're looking at, you can really get a jump start on this industry. And on top of that, the scouts and the GMs, they'll respect you a lot more because they actually know you know what you're looking at. And you're not just some guy looking off NFLDraftScout.com.
So how do you go about making it in this industry? You got John Henderson first, but it didn't like all of a sudden snowball where you were getting every top talent. You didn't get Patrick Mahomes. You didn't get one of the top court. Like, so you obviously had to go back to like the grunt work basically and try to find guys that maybe nobody's heard of before. How did you go about doing that?
Yeah, I talked about this yesterday with somebody actually in regards to the XFL. You know, I would not be in this industry still after all these years if it wasn't for NFL Europe. You know, it gave my players, my low-level guys, a chance to not only get paid but to be over there playing. You know, NFL Europe's been gone a long time. A lot of people don't remember it as well. Mm-hmm. But they had what they call an allocation. So you're allocated to individual teams, the Chiefs, the Buccaneers, the Dallas Cowboys. And those guys were property of those teams. So when you came back, you know, you were able to go to camp with those teams. And they, you know, within that allocation, you were allowed to, you know, go throughout the whole camp. Like you didn't get cut first cut. You had, you got all four preseason games, which was a huge advantage. And it was an ability for me to house those guys and to be able to build relationships with teams through their film, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm hoping the XFL will stick around because of that. You know, it's not like it's the greatest show on turf or anything like that, but it's a great way for agents to continue to keep players playing and not sitting on the sidelines.
All right, tell me what your job is all about, because I think many of us, myself included, think, all right, here's what I'm going to do. I got this guy. I'm going to negotiate with the general manager, get a contract, get my 3%, and I'm going to hit the road. What is actually your job as an agent like if you're representing a guy that's, say, like a third-round pick or a fourth-round pick or a middle-of-the-road type of guy? What does it entail?
A lot of babysitting. babysitting, no, you know, within the draft process or just
the whole process of you're my agent. What do I get out of you? What do you do for me kind of on a daily basis?
Well, seeing that broad jump on the,
it's a good one.
It's a good one.
It's
and I tell you what, that's why I'm actually here.
Right. Yeah.
You're trying to sell
me?
You.
Yeah.
but the bottom line is that, you know, the process is that, you know, you obviously, you recruit these guys throughout the whole season.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like a dating process. You meet them, you meet their family, you go their mentor, their girlfriend, and you know, you cultivate the relationship. And then, you know, if they decide to sign with you, they cannot sign with you until their eligibility is up. Typically you go to their last game and you sign them right there on the field, especially if they're a top prospect, because guys will come in and sign them from away from you. And, you know, you go through that, and then you send them to training facilities. We used places in Florida and Phoenix, another place in Columbus, Ohio called Westside Barbell. It's one of the most famous gyms in the world. Louis Simmons, unbelievable. But and then they train all the way to the – if they're a combine invite, then they go to Indy. They train all the way to get to Indy, and if they if they don't, then it's for their pro day, which is usually early to mid March, late March, and then from there, they have what they call individual days. So it's almost like their positional coach will come in and want to evaluate them a little bit closer up, come and watch film. They'll get them on the field, do drills, and then they have them come in for visits. Teams only have so many visits per draft.
Mm-hmm.
That's why the Chiefs have their local day, so they can see as many kids as they can without going over that number. And then it's the you know, all the hay's in the barn, and you just, you know, pray and hope that you get your investment back.
You make some money back on the back end. So who are some of your clients? I mean, people are sitting there going, who does this guy represent? Who are some of the guys that you have currently in the NFL and that you've had in the NFL before that people would know, both coaches and players?
Well, Delanie Walker with the Tennessee Titans is probably the biggest guy I've ever worked with. You know, mainly, you know, to be honest, it was most fulfilling because he was a small college guy. No one knew who he was. I really didn't think he would play very long because he wasn't very physical. And he ended up becoming one of the most physical guys, you know, that we've ever represented. Aaron Henderson played a long time in the NFL with the Vikings and Jets. EJ, his brother.
Mm-hmm.
Played for the Vikings. I've represented probably over 40 guys total in my career. Those are the guys that I'm closest to, honestly. You know, not all these players are all built alike. And, you know, there's some pitfalls in this industry where, you know, it's a little bit more business than relationships when it comes to the money.
Right.
You know? So, you know, at the end of the day, you know, the business, a lot of people come up to me, I want to get into this and into this. Well, it's not a business for the faint of heart. So maybe that's why I'm doing some radio too.
Well, yeah, but if I came to you and said, Jim, I want to get into this business, I want to be an agent, what would you tell me?
I would tell you to get a very nice line of credit and sell your house and move into an apartment. No, it's something I actually have a hard time even telling anybody to get into it at this point in the way the business has evolved. You know, they're taking the 3%, and a lot of guys are only getting 1% now, especially on high-level guys.
Wow.
You know, the NFLPA decided to have the option. They didn't just stick it to guys like 3%. I mean, you can do 0.5%, and some agents are doing it to sign a first-round pick. You know, to be honest, that is not something that, you know, I if that continues, I don't know how much longer I would do the player side. I would just continue to work with coaches. Because, I mean, how are you going to make money?
Yeah.
How are you going to do it?
How are you going to do it? So what coaches do you have? Like, you got, like the, you know, all the big college coaches, like Saban your guy or something like that?
No, no. No, I know Nick when he was at Michigan State, though, but back in the day. But he's an Ohio, you know, Ohio guy. And, you know, I have a guy, but a young coach named Ryan Held, who's at Nebraska, who I think, honestly, is probably the young and upcoming guy. He's a top 15 recruiter in America last 3 years. And I've got Dan Quinn with the Atlanta Falcons, Mike Waffle, who's a longtime defensive line coach in the NFL. Mm-hmm. He's out of the league right now, probably going to retire. But, I mean, I even represented Bob Kramalowicz, who, you know, worked with Derek Thomas, Warren Sapp, all the greats. And so, you know, it probably will be my future down the line as I get older. The recruiting, you know, the recruiting lifestyle is not as conducive to family. And I just had my first son 9 months ago, and it's definitely changed my life a lot. So
no doubt about it. All right, so you're fresh back from the combine in Indianapolis. I want to kind of go behind the scenes where people don't get to go. I mean, like you know, we see it on TV. We see a guy run a 40-yard dash. We see a dude in a suit with some sneakers on run a 40-yard dash. We think, yay, that's the NFL combine. From an agent's perspective, like, what's going on behind the scenes that we don't get to see at the NFL combine?
Well, the number one reason why the NFL, you know, brought the combine to the forefront of the business many years ago. First off, it was done in Phoenix outdoors. Is they use it as a way to bring all the players in to get their physicals. That's really the number one reason why they have the combine. Any NFL executive,
basically to turn their head and cough is what they wanted to do. It was the easy way to do that.
Right, and you got to have a physical. If you don't have a physical on a player, he'll never be drafted. If you have a player or you know, that has not, who's done some really amazing numbers throughout the process, the combine or the pro day, and has not had a physical, he will not be drafted. You know, it's just the way the mechanism works.
Mm-hmm.
And its liability. So that's really why the combine, the cute guys in the shorts and everything and all that, that's for the fan, you know, to be honest. And the other part of the combine that most people do not see is really the jostling for dollars in free agency. I mean, most of the deals that are being done are done there, at least the prelim stuff. So, mm-hmm. You know, meeting with all the guys, you know, in the facility, the hotel, the restaurants around Indy, St. Elmo's, you know, the famous St. Elmo's.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's what a lot of people don't see, that it really is truly a meeting place for free agency to begin, you know. So the other thing that people don't see most of the time is you know, the training staffs of these individual players. I mean, they're actually going through drills and all that stuff inside the hotels, inside the convention rooms, working on drills, You know, and agents can't go into the on the field. They can't go into the stadium. They have to be outside. And if they are, I mean, there's you could be getting a lot of trouble. Most of the people that are in there are credentialed college coaches, high school coaches. Agents aren't allowed in there at all. I've never met a single agent that has ever been in there that's ever stepped foot in the stadium. So
where's all the negotiation taking place? Like, if you want to meet with Brett Veach, say, hey, I got a free agent that wants to be a member of your organization, and he goes, yeah, we'd like to talk to you about him. How does all of that go down? Where do those communications take place?
It could be done at a restaurant. It could be done inside the convention center. It could be done in a hotel room. I mean,
yeah,
there's a lot of places to hide in Indy, just like at the Senior Bowl in Mobile. And that's another place where a lot of teams will sit down and talk to agents or representatives about the next free agency, you know, or the new contract, the second or third contract. Yeah, I mean, that's a huge part of it. You know, that's where most of the big deals are done. Mm-hmm. I mean, and then obviously they're hammered out over the phone. But and then obviously when free agency opens that night or whatever at midnight.
So why don't they let agents in the combine? Like, what's the point of keeping agents on the outside? Like, are you like kids looking through the knot holes trying to figure out what's going on inside?
I don't think it's so much for the teams as much as it is for them, other agents tampering with other players. You know, you got a collection of high-priced guys in one area, you know. And I probably would guess that, you know, hey, you know, you've got, you know, old Tom Coughlin up there, time, and he probably doesn't want to be bothered by, you know, Joe Blow agent, you know, asking, hey, how about my guy? Or, you know, back in the old days, we used to pass out DVDs, you know, to the prospective teams and stuff, you know.
So you guys were kind of like the strip club dudes out in Vegas with those cards that are passing out cards. Like, you guys were doing that with DVDs, like Tom Coughlin, some of these old cats that they're walking in.
There used to be an all-star game called Texas versus the Nation, and I mean, I'd sit there and pass out DVDs. I remember Danny Amendola, you know, his agent was like, had a box full of DVDs passing them around at the Texas versus the Nation game. You know, he's just a little 5'9" receiver. His agent did a hell of a job. You know?
Yeah, got him a pretty sweet deal and like a hell of a career, right?
Hell of a career and a lot of, you know, had a pretty nice looking girlfriend too.
No doubt. Yeah, I mean, it's amazing when you play a sport, man. What can happen to you with the women? All right, so that's kind of the behind the scenes for the agent at the NFL Combine. You're on the outside, you're looking in, hoping your guys go in there and do well. Mm-hmm. What's it like for a player that we don't get to see on the inside of the NFL Combine?
I mean, I would say 9 out of 10 players I've ever talked to, either worked with or didn't work with, I just knew. I mean, it's a hellacious week for them. I mean, they're up very, very early and go to bed very, very late. And it's a bang, bang, bang type of process. They don't get much sleep. They're worn out after. The meetings are the worst part. The physical is probably number two because it's such a long process. It's the most thorough process you'll ever go through. I mean, interview wise and physical wise. You know, as we've all heard, some of the weird questions that these guys ask, some of them, in my opinion, are very inappropriate as well. Mm-hmm. Some of it, I think, is arrogance, and some of it's just trying to be funny, but it's not, you know. The old Dez Bryant, you know, question that he was asked about his mother, which I don't think anybody should ever be posed on that, regardless if it's true or not. You know, and the on the field stuff, I mean, is, you know, the stuff you see on NFL Network. I mean, that stuff is the easy part, believe it or not.
Really, the 40 and the bench, that's all the easy stuff.
Yeah, huh? Because they've been trained for it for weeks and weeks. We train our guys for 9 weeks, and we feel like that is the optimal opportunity for them because you're not overtrained. So
I trained for 10 minutes for that broad jump and see what I was able to do with that. I mean, 9 weeks seems a little excessive to me. I don't know.
I thought that was precision. Precision.
nine weeks. So what's the training process like? Like, what do you put these guys through for 9 weeks to get them ready for that combine?
Nine weeks.
And that's basically from the end of football season to the combine for the most part.
You know, we've had guys, you know, play in certain bowl games where, I mean, literally the next night or the next morning, they'll fly out and start training. Literally pack up their college gear, send it home and fly off to the next location to train. Especially if they're in the combine and it's like a whole new life. And on top of that, you know, it's a very regimented schedule where, I mean, even in Phoenix, we had to set up. We used a culinary school to come in, cook, prepare their meals for them in their apartment or condo. Their shakes were all prepared. Everything is done to a certain precision.
And who's paying for all of that?
We are.
You are as a company. Mm-hmm. Where do you get that money to? I mean, because that's not, you're not funding somebody to go to Miami for 2 days. You're funding 9 weeks of just one person training times how many people you got with all, like, how does that happen?
Well, I mean, you better be making good money. On top of that, you better have some banks lending you some money.
Yeah.
It's about $25,000 per player, you know. Sometimes 50, you know. There are agents out there that are spending $100,000 for training. That's housing, food, transportation, rent a car, flights here, there. It's very, very... It's insane. Yeah.
I mean, is that worth it? I mean, do you get your money back when you're spending that kind of, you know, bankroll on, you know, some guy to train to get ready for the NFL Combine?
I just talked to a father last night, who actually I met at an XFL game over the weekend. His son signed with an agent out of Chicago. Been in the agent business a long time, and he dropped $25,000 on his son to train. And I never told him this, but I'm like, how he was never going to get his money back. I mean, even it would take years of being in the NFL to make it back. That's what's going on in this business, is that, you know, when I first got in, I never paid for training for an undrafted rookie, never. And he ended up signing a lot of good players that ended up playing a long time, 4 or 5 years, mm-hmm. which is a long time in this league. And these guys now are getting $25,000, $30,000, $35,000 a train up front, a rental car, a line of credit. Taking lines of credit out for them so they can have access to lines of credit, get a new car. I mean, it's very, 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 it's just, you know, it's one of the most insane business models you'll ever come across.
So what's the success rate though, dude? Like, I mean, it can't be, right? I mean, like one out of every 10 hits, and then you pray that the other nine don't bleed you to death.
Well, I mean, you know, you get lucky and you hit a honey hole like I did with the 6'10"
honey hole,
you know, you know, with the 6'10" crew, you know, yeah. We're all got all these great athletes in one locale,
right?
You know, you can get lucky, you know, and you know, the success rate is very, very low. I had a gentleman whose son was going to law school at Miami, and he wanted to. His dad was a very, very world renowned doctor. I met him through some people, and his son just wanted to be a sports agent. I let him work with me for a while, and I just told him at the end, I said, I prefer you not to get involved. It's just, if you don't have the connections and the inside, you're never going to survive. It's going to take you years. And now the NFLPA has a new rule within the last few years with the last CBA that if you don't have an active player in the NFL, In a 3-year span, they actually kick you out.
Oh, no kidding!
They do not allow you to represent players. Yeah.
Wow. So then you have to reapply for certification and do all that kind of stuff.
Reapply, and then you got to get rebonded. I mean, we're bonded for like $2.5 million, even the low level guys. And I mean, that costs $4,000-$6,000, you know, to be bonded. And so, you know, at the end of the day, you're already out the door before you even go out and recruit one player. $5,000-$8,000.
I mean, it may be cheaper to open a Subway than to get into the agent business in the NFL.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, absolutely. And, you know, and you'll eat fresh.
And you'll eat fresh all day long. And they eat for free. And that's why you don't get any profits off the deal.
You know, but it is. It's a very, very lucrative business, but it's a very, very cutthroat business where, I mean, one mistake on one player could sink your whole deal, mm-hmm. you know. And you got to get lucky. There's no, you know, that word is thrown around a lot, you know, but you got to get lucky with a player that plays. It doesn't have to be a high level draft pick. It could be a guy that's a undrafted that hits it big, you know. There are guys that hit it big as undrafted. There's a lot of them, you know. You know, that's what we're dealing with this new collective bargaining agreement, is that they're trying to focus on, you know, the centralized league, part of the league where, you know, the normal guys. Not the Russell Wilsons, because that's what makes the league, not the stars.
Right.
You know, so.
So for a guy like you, or really just any agent, you talked about that honey hole, obviously, and you hope to get like five or six guys from Ohio State all want to be with you. When do you feel like, as an agent, maybe, and maybe you haven't gotten there yet, maybe you are there, but when do you feel like you've arrived in this business and you feel like everything is moving in the right direction and you don't have to worry about a bank loan to bankroll a guy so he can go train in Phoenix, Arizona for 9 weeks?
I don't even know. I mean, it takes years to do that. I don't think that I've ever felt that way, just because I don't cheat. So, that's a really strong term, but I just have never paid any players. Mm-hmm. And so every year, you know, you're always looking over your back in regards to, signing new players or doing second contracts, which is where, in our industry is the honey hole again. Is where you actually make that money where you can go, wow, okay, I'll take my wife to St. Lucia.
Right, exactly. Do something
so
nice for
her. Yeah. I mean, and, the rookie contracts, I mean, even with like a guy like Patrick Mahomes, I mean, Lee Steinberg hasn't made a ton of money on that deal. He paid tons and tons of money to house him, train him, and feed him for, to do all that, to sign him, So, yeah, I mean, it's a very, very fine line in this industry.
So back to the combine with the player, and mm-hmm. and you're taking them through and you're training them 9 weeks to get ready to run the 40 or to bench press or to do whatever it is that they have to do at the combine. Take the physical out of it, because I know that that's vital. What's the most important thing for the player at the combine?
Well, first off, I want to ask you about the 135-pound, why didn't you guys do 225?
Because barely we could lift 135. Yeah, so... So that answers your question, right?
There is video of that.
Oh God, yes. There's great video of that coming. Yes,
I'll have to see that. Now, yeah. Can you repeat that question?
What is the most important thing for a player at the combine? Save the physical, obviously, but like, what's the most important thing? Like, if you're coaching a player, you say you gotta nail this. Like, what is the this?
Drill wise,
anything wise, could be the interview, it could be behind the scenes stuff, it could be all, whatever.
If you're a player with off the field issues, you got to nail the interviews, right? So mm-hmm. There's guys that don't, and I to this day I don't understand how you can't go in there for 15 minutes and not nail it when it's the biggest interview of your life. You're talking 6 to 7 figure opportunity, maybe even 8 figure down the road. The drill wise, it's position specific. A lot of those drills are trying to see if you're stiff, and because this league is all about flexibility now. When I was playing, it was all about power and how strong were you and how durable could you be, because it was more of a run-based type offense.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's about speed and flexibility and length. So, these guys, a lot of these three cone, the pro agility, it's all to see you're stiff in your hips and your legs and in your back, your lower back. Like O-linemen, those drills will, you're doing your drops and stuff like that. I mean, that stuff will definitely show if you're pretty stiff.
Mm-hmm.
And stiff is the kiss of death in professional football right now. I mean, very few guys play in this league that are stiff, unless they're just really, really talented guys and very, very strong and are able to overcome it. But I would say, that is, the drills and being able to overcome that type of stuff, which is a lot of that's done through repetition and confidence within the drill. Now, some of the if you're overly stiff, then it's hard to really mask any of that. Any coach will tell you, if he's stiff, he probably won't be able to play at that level. So that's why you see guys. The D2s and the small college, a lot of those guys are not as fast and they're pretty stiff.
Mm-hmm. What about the interview process, though? We hear about that all the time. You mentioned, like Dez Bryant mm-hmm. getting asked questions if his mom's a prostitute and things like that, like the unprofessional stuff. What are those, like, take me there as a player to an interview. What are those interviews like with those teams?
Well, a part of your combine prep, you have interview prep, too, and they go through, and a lot of guys will have, people that are quote-unquote experts on the interview process. The behind the scenes, I mean, it's a regular hotel room where they'll have, you know, some beverages, some snacks for them. And
booze? Or are we talking like soft drinks? And
soft
stuff?
Drinks,
like,
yeah. Soft drinks, frescas, you know, that type
right.
of stuff. And you know, and they sit down and they go through. I really think that for a lot of guys, because let's be honest, most football players are not, you know, it's an aggressive game. Mm-hmm. So I think if a guy is like an overly aggressive type player, they'll try to get his goat in regards to ask him questions that are maybe a little bit off the wall.
So basically they're trolling these guys
a little bit
in there. Mm-hmm. Well, what's the point of that, though? Like, if you're going in for a job interview, or I'm going in for a job interview and I'm interviewing with somebody, I wouldn't expect to have them sit there and try to troll me. I would expect them to try to sit there and like find out about me.
The NFL. Now, if you have a really strong personality where you can, you know, kind of, you know, just make it a normal, natural conversation, some guys are able to do that and it makes it very comfortable. Some guys are a little standoffish, you know, and then it becomes kind of a troll. I mean, all the trolling has been done way before they sat down in that. I mean, NFL security for these teams and NFL security within the league, and each team has their own arm of NFL, you know, security.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these guys, they know everything from their life, from when they were a kid to everything, you know, from the end. I mean, if they had a disorderly conduct in college or a minor possession because – they're at a little house party. I mean, they know everything.
How much does that factor in for teams, though? If you have a couple of issues from college, like you got into a fight or you got a DUI or something like that, does that even matter to these teams?
If you're like a top-rounded guy, no.
Yeah.
If you're a lower-rounded guy, yes. Because they don't want to be on the hook for that money.
Right.
The talent level doesn't outweigh all that. If you're a, you know, like Warren Sapp, when he came out, he had, all those failed marijuana tests and some issues, little things.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it kept some teams, put him high on the board, but someone still took him in the first round.
Right.
I mean, so, you know, the triggers in the NFL are domestic violence, violent crimes, the weed and the alcohol stuff, unless you're out there, you know, three DUIs or two DUIs while you're in college. I mean, that stuff's kind of, you know, par for the course, unfortunately. But, you know, the violent crimes against women, violent crime against anybody, I mean, that stuff will knock you off. I mean, there's guys that get completely knocked off the board. I mean, for the whole draft.
Sure. So, but sometimes they overlook those things, too.
Sometimes. I mean, you know? Sometimes. I mean, the league has changed in that respect. They're becoming more PC.
Mm-hmm.
Than they did, you know, back in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, where they would sweep that stuff under the rug and they would do what they want to do. It's just too much media, too much, you know, information out there.
Yeah, like everybody knows everybody's business.
Yeah,
it's become such a small community,
yeah,
you know. So when you're looking at these players and they're coming out of these meetings, like, what are you saying to them after they're done getting interviewed by these guys in the NFL? Obviously, how did it go? But, like, what are you hearing back in return from these guys?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot, you know, once again, there's a lot of smoke and mirrors in these interviews, too. Some teams will show that they have a lot of interest because they want to use it as a front for another guy or another situation, or they're going to trade up. I mean, it's all a chess game from day one. It really is. Sometimes you get the real skinny on the interview where there's some true interest and true love within that, you know, player, and they want to take him. You know, some teams will say, hey, we're looking at him at 5-7, you know, or 3-5.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously, you know, you got to really, 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 you know, screw it up to just have your draft stock plummet off 15 minutes. You know, you got a whole resume of 4 or 5 years. You know, not only on the field, but off the field. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
And you've seen that happen, though, too. Though,
yeah. Sure. I mean,
how many times have you had to run around cleaning up somebody's crap because they messed up in an interview or something like that? You as the agent got to go in there and be Mr. Fix-It.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially, but it's usually stuff that happened on campus.
Mm-hmm.
And then he comes in and he's a little bit weird in the interview, or maybe he's not as forthcoming. That's when you have to clean it up. I mean, even send letters to, you know, I've even had psychologists send letters to executives and stuff and say, hey, this is where it's really at,
mm-hmm.
you know, clinically, you know. So, I mean, you do whatever you have to do
to get your guy at the job, man.
Yeah, I mean, you got money on the line. And you know what? You care for these guys. I mean, you know, even some of the bad seeds out there. I mean, you know, these are your family. I mean, that's one of the only reasons why I've stayed in it as long as I have is it is a family atmosphere. It's an extension of a team that you grew up playing with. You can't be, you know, only at 6'10" can you guys go out and still, you know, run around and mm-hmm. pretend like you're still playing, you know.
Right.
In the real world, mm-hmm. you know, we, you know, I'm not going to suit up anymore. This is my team.
Right. So. Have you gotten to a point, though, where you had to get rid of a guy because he was just bad for you?
Yes, many, many times.
Really?
I mean, oh, yeah. I mean, you know, once again, you know, I had a young man years ago that actually had his pro day at a big school, Big Ten school, actually beat up his girlfriend in the hotel right after the pro day.
Oh, jeez.
So I, you know, I had to get involved in that, and I was heading to the airport in Minneapolis, and I said, hey, listen, we're going to have to go our separate ways, and I sent a termination letter to him, and that was it.
That was it.
I've had other guys, too, that just, you know, unfortunately, you know, they just didn't make it, and I gave them a year of my time. Didn't lose a ton of money on those deals. Usually those are undrafted where we, you know, figured out something, you know, comparable to what we do for our high level guys.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's just that we went on our separate ways, and I just said, you probably will do better with someone else that has got a little bit more fresh blood that'll, you know, go that extra mile for you. And I did it for a year, and I think it's the end of the road for us.
Yeah. So when you say give up on a guy like that, you work with a guy for a year, that is a money loser for you. I mean, there's no way to recoup any of that money.
And I should rephrase give up. I just, you know, everything has a expiration date, everything in life, and we all know that. And, you know, I want the guy to, you know, to be able to continue his career. And I've only done that a few times. I mean, I've taken guys on over the years that, you know, I mean, that probably I should have cut loose a long time ago, but I cared for them as people. And you know what? The funny part is I ended up always seeing them to get them somewhere, even if it was up in Canada and they're making, you know, $140,000, $150,000 a year. Well, that's pretty good living for 6 months.
Not bad. Do you get paid in Canadian money on a deal like that, or do you get paid in dollars?
No, they get paid in Canadian, and then when they come across the line or back into the U.S., it's converted over to, so I get paid in U.S.
You get paid in U.S.
But
dollars.
The Canadian dollar's been good.
Yeah.
You know? So, I mean, you lose coming over to the States. I mean, you lose 10, 15, 20 grand sometimes.
Wow.
I mean, it's huge.
That's a big chunk of change. That's a lot of money.
But see, I try to bill them in Canadian, and they're like, hey, I'm going to pay in U.S. You understand? I'm getting paid in U.S.
Right, yeah. All right, before we wrap every one of these episodes, I want you to share a great story of something that nobody else has experienced, like a behind-the-scenes type of story from your years in doing this, whether it's at a Super Bowl, whether it's at a game, whether it's at a college, whether it's at a practice, whatever the case may be, something that's going to get people to go, wow, that's an incredible story. What do you have this episode?
Well, there's a lot of them, and they'll probably get better and better with each episode, to be honest, you know, a little bit more thought process. But I have one where I was, you know, literally a 26-year-old kid, you know, with my partner. We're out in San Diego for the 2003 Super Bowl, Raiders, Tampa Bay Bucks, and a pretty well-known quarterback was out there, and worked for one of the big sports media outlets at the time. And, you know, we're at a Super Bowl party sponsored by the NFL.
Nice.
And
so you get to go to that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Being in the media, you don't get invited to any of those kinds of things.
Yeah, yeah.
But that was a good Super Bowl, too, because San Diego was one. I think that was my second Super Bowl that I was at. So I went New Orleans and San Diego.
And that's
right off the jump, those are two awesome places to have a Super Bowl.
And that's
right?
The worst part about the Chargers going away is it's no longer going to be. And it was. It was a great time.
Yep.
Pacific Beach, the whole nine. But so we're, you know, we're sitting here at this Super Bowl party, and this well-known quarterback was entertaining what we thought was a lady, mm-hmm. and was with a gentleman that was acting as a lady, and kissing and schmoozing and holding hands, and you know, as my partner and I are just about ready to lose our mind, you know, because we just can't believe. We're trying to figure out if he really is, like, playing a joke or if he knows what's going on.
Right.
had a few adult beverages, this quarterback, and ended up walking away. Thought he was the man of the night, and gave me the thumbs up like, I'm a winner tonight, and walked away with that particular lovely lady.
That was a man.
That was a man.
Nice.
And was about 6 foot. So.
Oh, that's a big woman.
Yeah. So, but you know, there's unfortunately this, fortunately or unfortunately, this league has many twists and turns, and there's a lot of good stories in this industry. So, I will enjoy you know, storytelling about those.
Yeah, we'll get to those as this podcast moves on. But basically, for everybody's knowledge, it's going to be just kind of a look inside behind the scenes as to what's going on in the NFL and some of the behind the scenes stories that you've experienced. And how many years have you been doing this now?
17, going on 18.
So going on 40 almost, probably.
Yeah,
right?
It feels
for,
like
for
it.
Your
yep.
life.
Yeah, it feels like it.
So, all right, man. Good first episode. We'll
appreciate
be back with another one. Come up with another great story that you can share. And we'll have guests and whatnot on throughout
sure.
the course of this as
Absolutely.
Well. Some of the people you know throughout the industry. And so this is a kind of a getting to know you type of episode. And now you know Jim is he's one of the best agents in the world. And he's going to have the best head coach in college football, Ryan Helm, pretty soon.
That
as
is
well.
Correct.
He'll
Absolutely.
Be, he'll be up there. And then you can really, really cash your check.
Appreciate it.
I hope you guys enjoyed episode one of Agent Confidential. You can see behind the scenes is pretty different than maybe what you thought goes on in front of the scenes, and you get a different perspective about life in the National Football League, plus a couple of good stories along the way. Stay tuned for episode two.